Smoke and Beans rode out an hour later. Smoke on a buckskin a good 17 hands high that looked as though it could go all day and all night and still want to travel. The old man who had given the spread to Faye had known his business. Smoke still wondered about how she'd gotten it. He decided to pursue that further when he had the time. About 10 miles from the ranch, they crossed with Smith and rode up to several men working box teeth cattle toward the northwest.
Hey!
They wheeled around at Smoke's approach.
Right, nice of you boys to take such an interest in our cattle, but you're pushing them the wrong way. Now move them back across the river.
Who the hell do you think you are?
Jensen.
I like the direction we're moving them better.
The man grabbed iron. Beans held a pistol on the other McCorkle riders. They were all looking a little white around the mouth.
That was Jack Waters, wanted for murder in two states. I've seen the flyers in Monty's office.
Yeah, he's got three brothers just as bad as he is. Waco, Hatley, and Collis.
You won't last a week on this range, Jensen.
Yeah.
Smoke moved closer to the man, staring him down. Smoke saw a bead of sweat gather on the rider's forehead. Smoke stopped just in front of the man. He was looking up at the rider, but the McCorkle man suddenly seemed to deflate all at once.
Jensen? Smoke Jensen?
Could be.
Hey, all of you better shuck out them gun belts and give them to me. When you've done that, start moving them cattle back across the river.
Then we're going to take a ride to see Cord.
Hey, King Cord McCorkle.
Cord walked out of his house to face Smoke. Cord's wife and daughter were safe inside. Beans stayed in the saddle, a Winchester 44 across a saddle horn. Smoke slung Jack Waters over his shoulder and walked toward McCorkle.
I got one of your men here.
Jack Waters.
We caught Jack and these other hands on Box T Range, rustling cattle. Now you know the law out here, Cord. We were within our rights to hang every one of them, but I gave them a chance to ride on. Waters decided to drag iron.
I see.
Now, Cord, I don't care if you and Hanks fight until you kill each other. I don't think either of you remember what it is you're fighting about, but the war against the Box T is over. Faye and Parnell Jensen have no interest in your war and nothing to do with it. Leave them alone.
You all through flapping your mouth, Jensen?
No. I want all the cattle belonging to Faye and Parnell Jensen rounded up and returned. I'm not saying that your hands ran them all off. I'm sure Hanks and his boys had a hand in it, too. And I'll be paying them a visit shortly. Get them rounded up and back on Box T Range.
And if I don't, not saying I have them, mind you.
You ever heard of Lewis Longmont McCorkle?
Yeah, what about him?
He's an old friend of mine, Cord. We stood shoulder to shoulder several years back and cleaned up Fontana. Then last year, he rode with me to New Hampshire. Probably read about that.
I have.
He's one of the wealthiest men west of the Mississippi, Cord. And he loves a good fight. He wouldn't blink an eye to spend a couple of $100,000 putting together an army to come in here and wipe your nose on a porcupine's backside.
Now, the truth was, Lewis was in Europe on an extended vacation, and Smoke damn well knew it. But sometimes a good bluff wins the pot. Cord had money, but nothing compared with Lewis Longmont. And he also knew that Smoke had married into a great deal of money and was wealthy in his own right.
I can't speak for Hanks, Jensen. You'll have to face him yourself. But as for me and mine, okay, we'll leave the Box T alone. I don't have their cattle. I'm not a rustler. My boys just scattered them. But I'm damned if I'll help you round them up. You can come on my range and look. Anywhere in the Box T brand, take them.
Smoke nodded and stuck out his hand. Cord looked startled for a few seconds. Then a grudging smile cut his face. He took the hand and gripped it briefly.
See you around.
Smoke walked back to his mount. Beans and Smoke swung around and rode slowly away from the ranch house.
My back is itchy.
So is mine. But I think he's a man of his word. I don't think he'll go back on it. Least I'm a poor judge of character if he does.
Hey, I just realized something.
What's that?
I plumb forgot to give them boys their guns back.
Well, shame on you, Beans. I hate to see them go to waste. We'll just take them back to Faye, and she can keep them in reserve. Never know when she might need them. You can swap them for some bear sign.
What about hands?
We gotta hire some, that's for sure. Faye's gotta sell off some cattle for working capital. She told me so. So we gotta hire some boys.
I'm darned if I know where. And there's still the matter of Dooley Hanks.
Smoking Beans rounded up about 50 head of Box Teak cattle around Cord's place and made camp early that day. Smoke was the first one up the next morning at dawn.
Oh, morning already?
Yep, gonna make some coffee and breakfast. Then we'll head off and bring our cattle back to Box T.
Oh, no shower.
You'll just get dirty again, Beans.
Yeah, town life's done spoiled me. Man gets used to shaving and bathing every day and putting on clean clothes every morning. It ain't natural.
Mm-hmm. Here, take this sack.
What's this?
Bear sign. I hid it from you yesterday.
Well, I forgive you. This time.
Smoke started breakfast, slicing bacon and cutting some potatoes, and adding a bit of wild onion for flavor.
I've been thinking. Problem of hands has got me worried. Ain't no cowboy in his right mind gonna go to work for the Box T with all this trouble staring him in the face.
I know, but I think I know one who just might do it for 30 and found, just for the pure hell of it. I'll talk to him this afternoon if I can. But first, we have to see Hanks.
You got a lot of damn nerve, Jensen. Mr. Hanks don't want to see you.
Well, Mr. Gage, you tell him I'm here, and I'll wait just as long as it takes.
Gage stared into the cold eyes of the most respected and feared gunfighter in all the West.
All right, mister. I'll tell him you insist on seeing him, but I ain't giving no guarantees.
Smoke considered the fact that Hanks and McCorkle could pass for brothers as he squatted under the shade of a tree and watched as Dooley left the house and walked toward him. Both of them square-built men, solid, both of them in their early to mid-40s. Dooley did not offer to shake hands.
Speak your peace, Jensen.
I told McCorkle this same thing. Leave Faye's land alone. Return any cattle you've taken, and that'll be the end of it. If not, you'll have more than a little bit of trouble on your hands.
From one man?
From more. You heard of what I've done and what Lewis Longmont's done. He hears anything about what's going on up here, and he'll come running. He'll bring half an army with him.
Maybe I'll just wait you out, Jensen.
Maybe, but I doubt it. You're paying fighting wages, Dooley, to a lot of people. You're like most cattlemen, Dooley. You're worth a lot of money, but most of it is standing on four hooves. Ready scratch is hard to come up with.
You won't get between me and McCorkle?
I don't care what you two do to each other. The area would probably be better if you'd kill each other.
Plain spoken, man, ain't you?
See no reason to dance around it, Dooley. What'd you say?
Something evil moved behind Dooley Hanks's eyes, and Smoke did not miss it. He didn't trust this man. There was no honor to be found in Dooley Hanks.
I didn't rustle no Box T cattle, Jensen. We just scattered them all to hell and gone. You're free to work my range. You find any Box T cattle, take them. You won't be bothered, and neither will Miss Faye or any punchers she hires, if she can find anyone stupid enough to work for her. Now get out of my face. I'm sick of looking at you.
The feeling is mutual, Hanks.
I don't trust that, hombre. He's got more twists and turns than a snake.
I got the same feeling. See if you can find some of Faye's beef and start pushing them toward Box T Gray's. I'm going into Gibson.
You're serious?
Oh, yes. 30 and found. And you'll work just like any other cowboy.
All right. Smoke, you have a deal. I was a vaquero before I turned to the gun. I will ride for the Box T.
Smoke and Lujan shook hands. Smoke had always heard how unpredictable the man was, but once he gave his word, he would die keeping it. Lujan headed out. Smoke soon followed him outside. He stood in front of the cafe and pondered which saloon to enter for a moment. Both of them were filled up with gun hands, but he did feel like having a cold beer. So he slipped the leather thongs from the hammers of his guns and walked over to the pussycat.
I'll have a beer. Thanks.
Jack Waters was a friend of mine, Jensen.
Can't you see I'm having a beer?
Smoke hooked his right thumb behind his big silver belt buckle, his fingers only a few inches from his cross draw 44.
And Jack was just doing his job. You know, everybody talks about how bad you are, Jensen. But I ain't never seen none of your graveyards.
You know my name. What's your name?
What's it to you?
Wouldn't be right to put a man in the ground without his name on his grave marker.
Oh, I'm gonna enjoy this.
The loudmouth stood up. Men on both sides of him stood and backed away, getting out of the line of fire.
My name's John Cheeve, Jensen. I've been looking for you near about 2 years.
Why?
My brother was killed at Fontana by you.
Too bad. You should have picked better company to run with. But I don't recall any Cheeve. What was he, some two-bit thief who had to change his name?
You're a no-good son of a cheating bitch, Smoke.
As Smoke turned, he slipped his thumb from behind his belt buckle and let his right hand dangle by the butt of his 44.
You could have cussed me all day and not said that. Make your grab, Cheeve.
Smoke had drawn both guns and fired, rolling his left hand 44. It was a move that many had tried, but few ever perfected, and more than a few ended up shooting themselves in the belly. John Cheeve had not even cleared leather. There were two bloody holes in the center of his chest.
I seen it, but I don't believe it.
A man stood up and tossed a couple of dollars on the table.
Cheeve come out of California. Some say he was as fast as John Wesley Harden. Count me out of this game, boys. I'm riding.
Impressive. I have to say it. You're about the best I've ever seen. Except for one.
Oh?
Yeah. Me. Name's Garrison.
Smoke returned the hard smile and turned his back to the man, knowing the move would infuriate the gun hawk. Smoke studied his beer mug, and he wondered as he did so how many more would fall under his guns. Although he knew this showdown would have come sooner or later, one part of him said he should not have come into the saloon. But another part of him said that he had a right to go wherever the hell he damn well pleased as long as it was a public place. It was an old struggle within the man. McCorkle, Jason Bright, and several of Cord's hands came in then. Their eyes set on the body lying in the middle of the floor.
What happened?
Cheeve started it with Jensen. He didn't even clear leather.
I thought you was gonna stay out of this game, Jensen.
Cheeve pushed me, Cord. I only came in here for a beer.
Well, man's got a right to have a drink. I seen some box tea cattle coming in, Jensen. They was grazing on range about 5-6 miles out of town, on the west side of the Smith.
Thanks. I'll have Lujan and a couple of others push them back to Box T Range.
Lujan?
Jason Bright bit his tongue. He seemed a little too close to showing his hand.
Yep. He went to work for the Box T a couple of hours ago.
A gun slick that Smoke knew from the old days when he and Preacher were roaming the land got up and walked toward the table where Cord was sitting.
I figure I got half a month's wages coming to me, Mr. McCorkle. If you've a mind to pay me now, I'd appreciate it.
With a wry look of amusement on his face, Cord reached into his pocket and counted out $50 and handed it to the man.
Here you go. You riding, Jim?
Yes, sir. I figure I can catch up with Red. He hauled his ashes a few minutes ago.
Right. Here's another 50. Give this to Red. He earned it.
Yes, sir. Much obliged. See you boys on another trail. This one's getting crowded.
Yeller. Just plain yeller is all he is.
Jim Kay is anything but yeller, Garrison. I've known him for 10 years. There's a hell of a lot of difference between being yellow and betting your life on a busted flush. There bad blood between you and Jim Kay, Smoke?
Not that I'm aware of. I've known him since I was just a kid. He's a friend of Preacher's.
Preacher pulled my bacon out of the fire long years back. Only time I ever met him. I owe him. I often wonder what happened to him.
He's alive, but getting on in years.
Oh, good to know. I'll say it now, boys. We'll leave the Box T alone. Our fight's with Dooley Hanks. Box T riders can cross our range and be safe doing it. They'll be coming through looking for the cattle we scattered. You don't have to help them. Just leave them alone.
A few of the gun slicks exchanged furtive glances. Cord missed the eye movement, but Smoke did not. The gunfighters that Smoke would have trusted had left the area, such as Jim Kay and Red. What was left was the dregs, and there was not an ounce of honor in the lot. The days drifted on, filled with hard, honest work and the deep, dreamless sleep of the exhausted. Smoke had hired two more hands, boys, really, in their late teens, Bobby and Hatfield. They had left the drudgery of a hardscrabble farm in Wisconsin and drifted, with dreams of the romantic West and being cowboys. And they had both lost all illusions about the romantic life of a cowboy very quickly. It was brutally hard work, but at least much of it could be done from the back of a horse. True to his word, Lujan not only did his share, but took up some slack as well. He was a skilled cowboy, working with no wasted motion, and he was one of the finest horsemen Smoke had ever seen. One hot afternoon, Smoke and Lujan looked up to see young Hatfield come fogging toward him, lathering his horse.
Mr. Smoke, I ain't believing this. You gotta come quick to the house.
Whoa, boy. Who put a burr under your blanket?
Mr. Smoke, my daddy read stories about that man up to Miss Faye's house when he was a boy. I thought they was all dead and buried in the grave.
Slow down, boy. What men?
Them old gunfighters up yonder. Come on!
Faye was entertaining them on the front porch when Smoke and Lujan rode up.
Well, I'll be damned.
Lujan looked first at the aged men on the porch and then gave a hard look at Smoke.
It is not nice to laugh at the old, my friend.
Lujan, I'm not laughing at them. These men are friends of mine, as well known as we are. Hell, we're pikers compared to these old gunslingers. Lujan, you're looking at Silver Jim, Pistol LaRue, Hard Rock, and Charlie Starr.
Dios mío! Those men invented the fast draw.
And don't sell them short even a day, Lujan. They can still get into action mighty quick.
I wouldn't doubt it for a minute.
If I'd have known you old coots were going to show up, I'd have called the old folks home and had them send over some wheelchairs.
Listen to this pup flap his mouth. I ought to get up and spank you.
Damn, where your knees pop and crack, he probably think you were shooting at him.
The men shook hands.
Man, this is Lujan. He's working for the Box T.
Yeah, I seen you down along the border some years back when them Sabler brothers called you out. Too bad you didn't kill all five of them.
Wasn't two down enough?
Nope. We stopped off down in Wyoming for supplies. Store clerk said the Sabler boys had come through the day before, heading up this way. Ben, Carl, and Delmar.
Many, many times I have wished I had never drawn my pistol in anger that first time. Of course, the shooting was over a lovely lady. And of course, she would have nothing to do with me after that.
What was her name?
I do not even remember.
The old gunfighters were all well up in years. Charlie Starr was the youngest. But they were all leather tough and could still work many men half their age into the ground. And the news that the Box T had hired the famed gunslingers was soon all over the area. Now, some of Cord McCorkle's hired guns thought that was just funny, and they thought it would be even funnier to tree one of the old gunnies and see what he'd do. The gunfighter they happened to pick that morning was, unfortunately, Pistol LaRue. Now, Pistol and Bobby were working some strays back toward the east side of the Smith when the three gun hawks spotted Pistol and headed his way. Just to be on the safe side, Pistol wheeled his horse to face the men and slipped the hammer thong off his right-hand colt and waited. That one of the men held a coiled rope in his right hand did not escape the old gunfighter. He had him a hunch that these pups were going to try to rope and drag him. A hard smile touched his face. That had been tried before, several times. Now you'll notice I did say tried.
Well, well. What do you reckon we come across here, boys?
Damned if I know, but it sure looks to me like it needs burying.
Yeah, it's done died and gone to stinking.
That probably your dirty drawers you smelling, sonny boy, since your mama ain't around to change them for you.
I think we'll just check the brands on them beeves.
I tell you what, you visit the shit house you eat regular too, and you probably should and soon, cause you goddamn full of it, I guarantee.
One of the men grabbed for his pistol.
Why, you son of a...
Pistol slug took the would-be gun slick in the lower part of his face and drove through the base of his throat. Pistol had drawn and fired so fast the other two had not had time to even clear leather. Now they found themselves looking down the long barrel of Pistol's peacemaker.
Now shuck out of them gun belts, using your left hands.
Bobby came galloping up to see what the shooting was all about.
Now you dismount. Hey, Bobby, get that rope.
Yes, sir.
We was just a-funnin' with you, that's all.
I don't consider being dragged no goddamn fun, and that's what you was gonna do, right? Right?
The boot heel was torn loose from the gunny's left boot.
Want it, boy?
Yeah! We all make mistakes!
Now get out of them clothes. Bare butt naked, both of you. Do it!
Red-faced, the men stood before Pistol, Bobby, and God in their birthday suits.
Time to get it, Bobby, but give them room to walk. They got a long way to hoof it.
Yes, sir!
Whoops-a-daisy. Look like your friend won't be making the trip.
The two surviving bare-butted men were tied, their hands behind their backs. Pistol looped the rope around his saddle horn.
Move out. Head for your bunkhouse, boys. Get gone.
What about Pete?
He gonna keep without getting too gamey. Now move.
Pistol and Bobby started moving. The men didn't have much of a choice. They followed. It was a good hour's walk back to the Circle Double C ranch house, and the gunnies hoofed it all the way.
Oh, come on! You gotta give us our boots back! Oh, my foot's bleeding all over the place! Oh, this ain't civilized!
Shoo, you two are just pitiful. Twice the injuns called me and made me run for it bare butt naked miles and miles and miles with them just a whooping and hollering right behind me. Huh, you two are disgrace.
Cord McCorkle stood by the front gate and had to smile at the sight as the painful parade came to a halt. He had ordered his wife and daughter not to look outside, but of course they both did.
At ease, gentlemen.
Oh.
Mr. McCorkle, my name is LaRue. Now, they call me Pistol. Now, sir, I was minding my own business, herding cattle like I paid to, when three or four of your hands come up, was going to put a loop around me and drag me. One of them went for his gun, but he was a tad slow. You're going to find him dead by that big stand of cottonwoods on the Smith. Now, he ain't real purty to look at, cause he wasn't all that purty when he was living. I brung these wayward children here back home. You want to spank them, that's your business. Good day, sir.
Pistol and Bobby swung their horses and headed back to Box T Range. Cord looked at the naked men and their bloody feet and briar-scratched ankles and legs. He turned to his foreman.
Yeah. Get their feet taken care of. As for you, Pete was one of your own. Go get him and bury him. And stay the hell away from Box T Riders.
Yes, sir.
One man did this to you. One old man. But that man and those other old gunfighters over at the Box T came out here in the 30s and 40s as mountain men. Tough? You bet your life they're tough. When they go down for the last time, they'll go out of this world like cornered wolves, snarling and ripping at anything or anyone that confronts them. Leave them alone, boys. If you feel you can't obey my orders, ride out of here.
The gunfighters stared at Cord, and all of them stayed. As Cord turned his back to him and walked toward his house, he had a very bad feeling about the outcome of the matter, and he couldn't shake it.
It's stupid. I don't even know why they hate each other.
Uh-huh. I'm gonna tell you something, Sandy, and it's just between you and me. I don't trust my father or my brothers. I think Daddy's gone crazy. I think my brothers have always been crazy. They've never been, well, just right as far as I'm concerned. They're cruel and vicious.
Rita, what do you think your daddy's gonna do?
I don't know, but he's up to something. He sent a handout last week to Helena. Then yesterday, this ratty-faced looking guy shows up at the ranch. Danny Rouge has a real fancy rifle. Carries it in a special made case. I think he's a back shooter, Sandy.
Sandy McCorkle and Rita Hanks, both in their late teens, had been forbidden by their fathers to see each other years ago. Of course, neither of them paid absolutely any attention to those orders, but their meetings had become a bit more secretive.
Do you want me to tell Daddy about this, Rita?
No. He'd know it came from me, and then you'd get in trouble. I think we better tell Smoke Jansen.
I'd like to tell him a thing or two in private. He's about the best-looking man I've ever seen.
He's also married with children, but he sure is cute. He's even better-looking than the covers of those books make him out to be. Have you seen the Moab kid?
Yes, he's darling!
Both women knew it was time for him to be married. Pretty soon they'd be pegged as old maids. They both had plenty of suitors, but none lasted very long. The young women were both waiting for that perfect man to come riding into their lives.
How in the world are we going to tell Smoke Jensen about this back shooter?
I don't know, but I think it's our bounden duty to tell him. People listen to him.
That Bobby's been getting all readier every time he gets around me. I think maybe he could get a message to Smoke and he'd meet us.
Worth a try. We'll take us a ride tomorrow over to the Smith and have a picnic and wait. Maybe he'll show up.
Let's do it. I'll meet you about noon.
The young women walked to their buggies. Both buggies were equipped with rifle boots, and the boots were full. A pistol lay on the seat of each buggy. Both Sandy and Rita could, would, and had used the weapons. With few exceptions, ranch-born and raised Western women were no shrinking violets. They lived in a violent time and had to be prepared to fight. Although most Western men would not bother a woman, there were always a few who would, even though they knew the punishment was usually a rope. Very little engine trouble now occurred in this part of Montana, but there was always the chance of a few bucks breaking from the reservations to steal a few horses or take a few scalps. With a wave, the young women went their way. Sandy back to the Circle Double C, Rita back to DH. Neither noticed the two men sitting their horses in the timber. The men wore bandanas around their faces and long dusters.
You ready?
I've been ready for some of that, Rita. Let's go.
What the hell?
Silver Jim found the overturned buggy while out hunting strays. The horse was nowhere in sight. He noticed that the Winchester 44 carbine was a good 20 feet from the overturned buggy. He surmised that whoever had been in this rig had pulled the carbine from its boot and was making ready to use it. Then he found the pistol.
Recently fired. Damnation. Better send a signal.
It took only a few minutes for Smoke and Lujan to reach him.
Oh, Dios mio. That is Senorita Hanks' buggy. I have seen her in it several times.
Stay with it, boys. Look around. I'll ride to the DH.
What the? Is that Smoke?
Hey, Hanks! Smoke's coming here! Looks like he's got fire under his ass!
All right, just keep him out there until you find out what it's about.
Gage, I need to see Hanks.
Smoke, what is this about?
This ain't about me. It's about Hanks' daughter.
Mr. Hanks, you should come out here.
What's all this?
Silver Jim found Miss Hanks' buggy just north of the range, by that creek overturned. No sign of Miss Hanks, but Silver Jim said her pistol had been fired. I left them looking for her and trying to cut some trail.
Rita, I'm obliged, Smoke. Grab some hands and let's ride, Gage.
I'll meet you back there.
Smoke cut across country, taking the timber and making his own trail, going where no large group of riders could.
Bobby, where's Silver Jim? Luan.
Silver Jim caught some sign. Him and Luan took off that away. Told me to stay here.
Hanks and his party soon reined up.
Oh my God. That gun. That's hers. I gave this gun to her and taught her how to use it.
Look!
Heads turned. Silver Jim was holding a girl in his arms, Luan leading the horse, some of its harness dragging the ground.
No. Rita, put her in the wagon.
Smoke took the girl from Silver Jim and carried her to the wagon. She had been badly beaten, and her clothing was ripped from her. One of her eyes was closed and discolored, and blood leaked from a corner of her mouth. Silver Jim had wrapped her in a blanket.
How did you... I mean, had she been...
I reckon her clothes and underthings is strewn over about a half mile. Looks like they was ripping and tearing as they rode. Two men took her, a third joined them over yonder on that first ridge. He'd been waiting for some time. Half a dozen cigarette butts on the ground.
She say who done this?
No, senor. She was unconscious when we found her.
Hanks turned to a man Smoke didn't know.
Shorty, go fetch that old rummy we call a doctor. If he ain't sober, dunk him in a horse trough till he is. Ride, man! You four, follow the trail they left behind. Bring him back alive, though. I want to stake him out.
Dooley turned his mean and slightly maddened eyes towards Smoke.
Ain't that what you done years back, Jensen?
That's what I did.
Good. Now go! We'll be back by my ranch. Smoke, tell me if you hear anything.
Smoke, they're gonna find out what we didn't tell them. The trail leads straight to Circle Double C Range.
And one of them horses has a chip out of a shoe. It'll be easy to identify.
Almost too easy, wouldn't you think?
That thought did cross my mind.
Then I'd best get over there.
Smoke, what's...
Trouble, Cord. Bad trouble.
What kind?
I'd rather not say out here.
Yeah, of course. Come on in.
Daddy? What's going on?
Go sit with your mother in the other room, girl.
Sandy just smiled sweetly and leaned up against the wall, folding her arms under her breasts. Cord lifted and spread his big hands in a helpless gesture.
Boys are bad enough, Smoke. But girls are impossible.
Silver Jim and Luan found Rita Hanks' wagon tipped over on the side of a road. I went to get her father while they looked for her. When I got back, they had found her. She was unconscious. Probably had a concussion. Her pistol had been freshly fired. She was attacked. We're thinking the men who attacked her didn't stop after she was knocked out. She's on her way back to her father's house, and the doctor's on his way there, too.
My God, I've got to get over there right now!
No. There's nothing you can do over there. Rita's unconscious and will probably remain so for many hours. Dooley is killing mad and likely to go further off the deep end. And those who... abused Rita are still out there. Your going over there would accomplish nothing. It would only put you in danger.
Sandy locked rebellious eyes with Smoke, but then she slowly nodded her head.
You're right, of course. Thank you for pointing those things out. I'll go tell Mother.
Smoke motioned Cord out onto the porch, where they could talk in private, freely.
There's more. There's a trail. Easy to follow. One of the horses has a chipped shoe. Trail leads to your land.
If the men who done it are here, we'll find them and hold them for the law. Or hang them. No matter what I feel about Hanks himself, Rita and my Sandy have been friends for years. Rita and her mama is the two reasons I haven't gone over there and burned the damn place down. I've known for years that Dooley was crazy, and his boys is twice as bad. They're cruel mean.
I've heard that from other people.
That's true. And good with short guns, too. Very good. As good and probably better than most of the hired hands on the payroll. Something you ought to know, Smoke. Dooley's hired a back shooter named Danny Rouge.
I know of him. Looks like a big rat. He's pure poison with a rifle.
Cord looked toward the bunkhouse where half a dozen gun hands were loafing.
Worthless scum. I was gonna let him go. Now I don't know what to do.
Smoke could offer no advice. He knew that Cord knew that if Dooley even thought his daughter's attackers came from the Circle Double C, he would need all the guns he could muster. They were all sitting on a powder keg, and it could go up at any moment. A cowboy walked past the big house.
Spring, find Dell for me. Tell him to come up here.
Yes, sir.
You want me to stick around and help you?
No, but thanks. This is my snake. I'll kill it.
I'll be riding in. You need help, don't hesitate to send word. I'll come.
I'll keep it in mind. Thanks, Smoke.
Smoke rode back to the site of the attack. His people had already righted the buggy and hitched up the now calmed horse.
I'll take it over to the DH.
I'll ride with you.
Wait, what am I supposed to do? Sit here and grow cobwebs? We'll all ride over.
Bobby had returned to chasing strays and pushing them toward new pasture.
Then let's go.
The foreman of the DH, Gage, met him halfway.
All right, you boys is all right. So I'll give it to you straight. Don't come on DH range no more. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, me and the regular hands, you could ride over any time. But Dooley done let his bread burn. He's gone slap nuts. He sent a rider off to wire for more gun hands, and they're waiting over at Butte. See, Lanny Ball found where them tracks led to McCorkle Range, and that's when Dooley went crazy. His wife talked him out of riding over and killing Cord today, but he's gonna declare war this time on Circle Double C and anybody who befriends him. So I guess all bets is off, boys. But I'll tell you this. Me and the regular boys is gonna punch cows, and that's it. Unless someone tries to attack the house. I'm just damn sorry all this had to happen. I'll be riding now. You boys keep a good eye on your back trail. I'll see ya.
Guess that tears it. Let's get back to the ranch. Faye and Parnell need to be told. So where do we stand?
Rita woke up late last night.
She remember who did it?
Well, either she doesn't, or she told her dad one of mine did. I sent word saying he was welcome to search my spread from top to bottom to help find the men.
That's right, Ferry.
Heard back pretty soon after. He thinks I know exactly who raped and beat his daughter, and that I was protecting them.
Man's beside himself with rage. Can't see nothing but enemies. He's always been like this?
Well, he's been an angry man, but he's been getting worse. The last few years, his wife had sometimes come to town sporting a bruise or two. People started spreading rumors. She don't come to town so much anymore. I tried. I don't know what else I can do.
Well, you about ready to go?
Yeah.
Parnell, looks like you're all packed up for a trip. What's going on?
Your cousin Faye refuses to leave. When I made the suggestion, she spoke to me with such unladylike language. I have decided not to return there until she apologizes for such unseemly behavior and such vile language.
Well, I hope you're not gone long. The kids ain't gonna teach themselves nothing.
The kids aren't going to teach themselves anything.
So you agree with me?
No, I mean... You and Faye are cut from the same cloth. Good day, Smoke. Mr. McCorkle.
Hey, you see them?
Who?
Over there.
Smoke nodded his head toward three men riding abreast up the street.
The Sabler brothers, Ben, Carl, and Delmar. They'll be gunning for Lujan. He killed two of their brothers some years back.
Well, it'll be interesting to see which saloon they go in.
You taking bets?
Not me. I damn sure didn't send for them.
The Sabler boys reined up in front of the hangout.
It's like they was told not to come to the Pussycat.
They probably were. No chip shoes on any of your horses, huh?
No. But several were reshod that day. Started before you came over with the news.
It's odd, Smoke. My foreman, Dell, he's as square as they come. Hates the gunfighters. But he says he can account for every one of them the morning Rita was raped. He says he'll swear in a court of law that none of them left the bunkhouse main house area. I believe him.
It could have been some drifters.
You believe that?
I don't know what to believe, really.
I better tell you. Talk among the DH bunch, the gun slicks, is that it was Silver Jim and Lujan and the Hatfield.
Smoke lifted his eyes to meet Cord's gaze. Cord had to struggle to keep from recoiling back. The eyes were ice house cold and rattler deadly.
Silver Jim is one of the most honorable men I've ever met. Lujan was with me all that morning. Both Hatfield and Bobby are of the age where neither of them can even talk when they get around women. Besides, he was within a mile of me and Lujan all morning. Whoever started that rumor is about to walk into a load of grief. If you know who it is, Cord, I'd appreciate you telling me.
It was that new bunch that came in on the stage the day after it happened. They come up from Butte at Hank's Wire.
Names?
All I know is they call one of them Rose.
Smoke! Smoke!
Hardrock found young Hatfield about an hour ago. He'd been tortured with a running iron and then dragged. He ain't got long.
Doc Adair, now sober for several days, looked up as Smoke and Cord entered the bedroom of the main ranch house. He shook his head.
Well, he's drifting in and out of consciousness. I got him full of laudanum to ease the pain. They burned him all over his body with a hot iron. And they dragged him. He ain't gonna make it. He wouldn't be a whole man even if he did.
No one need to ask what he meant by that.
Me and him growed up together. We was neighbors. More like brothers than friends.
Faye put her arm around the young man and held him. Then, at a signal from Smoke, she led him out of the bedroom. Smoke knelt down beside the bed.
Can you hear me, Hatfield?
Yes, sir, Mr. Smoke.
Who did this to you?
One of them was called Rose. They called another one Cliff. I ain't gonna make it, am I, Mr. Smoke? Tell me the truth.
The doc says no, but doctors have been wrong before.
When they burned my privates, I screamed and passed out. I come to and they was dragging me.
Smoke could see one empty eye socket.
Send any money due to me to my ma. Tell her to buy something pretty with it. Watch out for Bobby. He don't look it, but he's cat quick with a short gun. Been practicing since he was about 6 years old. It's getting dark. See you, boys.
The young man closed his good eye and spoke no more. Doc Adair pushed his way through to the bed. He held a small pocket mirror up to the boy's mouth. No breath clouded the mirror. Doc pulled the sheet over Hatfield's face.
Lujan, go sit on Bobby. Hog time if you have to. We'll avenge Hatfield, but it'll be after the boy's been given a proper burial.
After the funeral, the days passed uneventfully. The normal day-to-day routine of the ranch devouring the men's time. Parnell moved back to the ranch within a couple of days. The murder seemed to make him protective of Faye and her ranch. Rita improved physically, but was not allowed off the ranch. And to make sure that she didn't try any meetings with Sandy, her father assigned two to watch her at all times. Bobby was a drastically changed young man. He called himself Bob Johnson now. The boy seldom smiled, and he was always armed. Smoke and Charlie Starred watched him practice late one afternoon when the day's work on the range was over.
He's better than good. He's cursed with being a natural.
Smoke knew only too well what the gunfighter meant. With Bob, it was almost as if a gun was a physical extension of his right arm. His draw was oil smooth, and his aim was deadly accurate. And he was fast, very fast. Old Pat rode out to the Brandon site in the early morning the sixth day after Hatfield's burying.
Hans, you send word, Smoke. Them Waters brothers come into town late yesterday, and they brought a half dozen hard cases with them.
Hans knows who they are?
He knowed of two of them. No Count George Victor and Three Fingers Kerman.
Other four looked meaner than snakes, Hans said. About an hour later, four more guns come in on the stage. Wore them big California spurs.
Of course, they went straight to the hangout.
Waters Bunch did. Them California gun slicks went over to the Pussycat. McCorkle's hiring again.
Damn.
Smoke really couldn't blame Cord. Every peace effort he had made to Hanks had been turned down with a violent outburst of profanity from Dooley. And Hanks' sons were pushing and prodding each time they came into town. Sonny, Bud, and Conrad Hanks had made their brags that they were going to kill Cord's boys, Max, Rock, and Troy. They were all about the same age, and according to Cord, all possessing about the same ability with a shotgun. Cord's boys were more level-headed and better educated. His wife had seen to that. Hanks's boys were borderline stupid, cruel, and vicious. Hanks had seen to that.
I'm curious as to when that back-shooting Danny Rouge is gonna uncork. I've been prowling some. I ain't picked up no sign of his ever coming onto Box T range.
Hanks hasn't turned him loose yet. I'll tell you all what's very odd to me. These gun hawks are drawing fighting wages, but they have made no move toward each other. I think there's something rotten in the potato barrel, boys. And I think it's time I rode over and talked it out with Cord.
You would have to bring that to my attention. I hadn't thought of that, but by God, you may be right. I hope you're not, but there's always a chance. Have you heard anything more about Rita's condition?
Getting better, physically. Hanks keeps her under guard at the ranch.
Yeah, same thing I heard. Sandy asked to see her and Dooley, said he wouldn't guarantee her safety if she set foot on DH range. He didn't out and out threaten her, he knows better than that, but he came damn close. His sons and my sons are shaping up for a shooting, though, and I can't stop them. I want to, but I don't know how.
How many regular hands do you have, Cord?
8, counting Dell. I always hire part-timers come Brandon time and drives.
So that's 12 people you can count on, including yourself and your sons.
Right. And Cookie is old, but he can still handle a 6-gun and a rifle. You think the lid's gonna fly off the pot, don't you, Smoke?
Yeah, but I don't know when. Do you think your wife and Sandy would go on a visit somewhere until this thing is over?
Hell no. If I asked Alice to leave, she'd hit me with a skillet. God only knows what Sandy would do or say.
Her mouth doesn't compare to Faye's. But stir her up and you've got a cornered puma on your hands. How about those California gun hands that just came in?
I don't trust them any more than I do the others. But I felt I had to beef up my gunnies.
I don't blame you a bit. And I may be wrong in my suspicions.
Sad thing is, Smoke, I think you're probably right.
Smoke left McCorkle's ranch and headed back to the Box T. Halfway there, he changed his mind and pointed his horse's nose toward Gibson. Some of the crew was running out of chewing tobacco. Four rides that Smoke hadn't seen before came his way. He pulled over to the side of the road and twisted in the saddle. He pulled his Winchester from the boot, levered in around and neared the hammer back, laying the rifle across his saddle horn. He was riding Dagger, and he knew the horse would stand still in the middle of a cyclone. He wouldn't even look up from grazing when he heard gunshots. The riders reined in. Smoke pegged them immediately. Arrogant punks, would-be gun slicks. Not a one of them over 21. But they wore 2 guns tied down.
You there, puncher! How far to Gibson?
I'm not standing in the next county, Sonny. And I'm not deaf, either.
Oh, you about half smart, though, ain't you? You know who you're talking to?
Just another loudmouth punk, I reckon.
You're lucky, cowboy. I'm feeling good today, so I won't call you down for that remark. I've killed people for less. I'm Twain.
Does that rhyme with rain, or have you got a speech impediment?
Damn you! Who do you think you are, anyway?
Smoke Jensen.
Twain's horse chose that moment to dump a pile of road apples in the dirt. From the look on Twain's face, he felt like doing the same thing in his own saddle. He opened and closed his mouth about 6 times. His friends relaxed in their saddles, making very sure both hands were clearly visible and kept well away from their guns.
Now, you keep on this road. Gibson's about 4 miles.
Yes, sir. We sure are obliged.
You got any sense, boy? You won't stop. You'll just keep on riding until you come to Wyoming. But I figure that anybody who cuts kill notches in the butt of their gun don't have much sense. Who you aiming to ride for, boy?
The DH spread.
Smoke sat his saddle and stared at the quartet. He stared at him so long they all four began to sweat.
Is something the matter, Mr. Smoke?
The rest of your buddies got names, Twain.
This here is Hector. That's Rod and that's Murray.
Be sure to tell that to the barber when you get to town.
Barber?
Yeah, he doubles as the undertaker.
Among the many horses tied to the hitch rails on both sides of the street, the first to catch Smoke's eyes was Bob's Paint, tied up in front of Hans' cafe. Smoke looped his reins and went in for some coffee and pie. He wondered why there was so much activity and then remembered it was Saturday. Parnell sat with Bob at a table.
What, you think we'll just be left alone? You think these problems is just gonna go away?
No, I simply believe that some issues can be better dealt...
Hey, fellas.
Mr. Jensen, perhaps you can talk some sense into this young man's head. He is going to call out these Rose and Cliff individuals.
Is that right? Mind if I sit down?
By all means.
What would you like?
Apple pie and coffee. Thanks, Hans.
Of course.
Well?
He's right, Parnell. I'd do the same if I was standing in his boots.
But he's just a boy. I cannot for the life of me understand why you didn't call the authorities after the murder.
Because the law is 100 miles away, Parnell. And out here, a man handles his own problems without running whine into the law.
I find it positively barbaric.
Yeah, but it's quick. Don't worry, there'll be plenty of lawyers out here before you know it. And they'll be messing things up and writing contracts so that only other lawyers can read them. That'll be good for people like you. Not so good for the rest of us. You haven't learned in the time that you've been here that out here, a man's word is his bond. If he tells you he's selling you 500 head of cattle, there will be 500 head of cattle, or he'll make good any missing. Call a man a liar out here, Parnell, and it's a shooting offense. Honorable men live by their word. If they're not honorable, they don't last. They either leave or get buried. Lawyers, Parnell, will only succeed in screwing that all up. You nervous, Bob?
Yes, sir. Some. But I figure I'll calm down as soon as I face him.
Well, as soon as we face them, Bob. Yeah, you'll calm down. Ever killed a man?
No, sir.
Your coffee and pie.
Thanks. A man gets real calm inside. It's the strangest thing. You can hear a fly buzz 100 yards off, and you can see everything so clearly. And the quiet is so much so it's scary. Dogs can be barking, cats fighting, but you won't hear anything except the boots of the man you're facing walking towards you.
How old was you when you killed your first man, Smoke?
15, I think. Maybe 14. I don't remember.
That must have been a terribly traumatic time for you.
Nope. I just reloaded her up and went on. Me and Preacher. I killed some Indians before that. In Kansas, I think it was. Pa was still alive then. They attacked us. I always got along with the Indians for the most part. Lived with them for a while. Me and Preacher. That was after Pa died. Drink your coffee, Bob. It's about time.
Smoke noticed that the young man's hands were calm as he lifted the cup to his mouth. Parnell looked at the men, his eyes drifting back and forth. He had heard from his sister and from the old gunfighters at the ranch that Smoke was a devoted family man, totally faithful to his wife and a loving father, a marvelous friend. Yet for all of those attributes, the man was sitting here talking about killing with less emotion than he exhibited when ordering a piece of pie. Parnell watched with a curious mixture of fascination and revulsion as Smoke took his guns from leather one at a time and carefully checked the action, using the napkin to wipe him free of any dust that might have accumulated during his ride to town. He loaded up the usually empty chamber under the hammer, then took a bite from his apple pie. Bob checked his Remington 44 and then pulled a short-barreled revolver out of his waistband and checked that, loading both guns full. He cut his eyes to smoke.
Insurance.
Never hurts. You know these boys, Bob?
They've been pointed out to me.
Their buddies are sure to join them. We're probably not going to have too much time for plan making. At the first twitch, we start shooting. Take the ones to your left. I'll take care of the rest.
Yes, sir.
Let's go. Parnell, you can finish my pie if you want.
They stepped out of the cafe and stood for a moment on the boardwalk, hats pulled down low, letting their eyes adjust to the bright sunlight. Both men had noticed, out of the corners of their eyes, the people lining both sides of the wide, dusty street, getting out of the way.
Your play, you call it.
Rose! Cliff! And any others who tortured and dragged Hatfield! Let's see if you got the backbone to face someone gun to gun!
Rose looked out the window of the hangout.
Shit! It's that damn kid!
And Smoke Jensen.
Hey, let's shoot him from here!
No.
Lanny, what the hell you talking?
They're calling you out fair and square, Rose. If you ain't got the stomach for it, use the back door and cut and run. And don't never show your faces around here again. I've killed a lot of men, and I've rode the Hoodow Trail with a posse at my back. But I ain't never tortured nobody while they was trussed up like a hog. I may not be much, but I ain't no coward.
Only a few of the other gun hawks in the large saloon nodded their agreement, but those few were the best known and most feared of the kind. It was enough to bring the sweat out on the faces of Cliff and Rose and the two others who had taken part in the dragging and torturing of Hatfield. When open warfare was finally called by Hanks, Lanny and the few others who still possessed a modicum of honor would backshoot and snipe at any known enemy. That was just the way of war. But when a man called you out to face him, you faced him, eyeball to eyeball.
Oh, hell. All right. Let's go!
Rose checked his guns and stepped out through the bat wings, Cliff and the others behind him. It was straight up noon. The sun, a hot, bubbling ball overhead. There were no shadows of advantage for either side. Smoke and Bob had drifted down the boardwalk and now stood in the middle of the street, about 10 feet apart, waiting. Rose and Cliff and their two partners in torture stepped off the boardwalk and walked to the center of the street.
Rose to my left. Cliff is to your right.
Who are those other two?
I don't know their names.
Take Rose and the one on the left. I'll take the other two.
You ready?
Oh, yeah.
Bobby and Smoke started walking, their boots kicking up small pockets of dust with each step toward showdown. Lanny Ball and the other gun hands who were not involved emptied out of the saloon to watch.
You boys watch this. I doubt there's many of you ever seen Jensen in action. Don't make no mistakes about him. He's the fastest I ever seen. Some of you may want to change your minds about staying once you've seen him.
I do not have to watch him. I am better.
See if you think that after this, Diego.
Lanny might be many things, but he was not arrogant when it came to facing Smoke Jensen. He did not feel that he was better than Smoke, but he did feel he was as good. When the time came for them to meet, and he knew it would all come down to that first well-placed shot. Lanny knew that he would probably take lead when he faced Smoke. Therefore, he would delay facing him as long as possible.
Hey, Johnson! You should have heard that punk squall when we laid that hot running iron against him. He jerked and hollered like a baby, squalled and bawled like a calf.
Neither Smoke nor Bob offered any comment in reply. A loud silence consumed them both. There was less than 50 feet between them when Rose made his move. None of the four even managed to get clear of leather. Without a word, one of the gun slicks watching walked off. He had a brother over in the Dakotas and concluded that this was just a dandy time to go see how his brother and his family were getting along. Hell would be better than this place. Smoke and Bob went to the Pussycat.
Two beers, barkeep.
The two sat down at a table with a clear view of the street. Neither of them spoke for several minutes.
Thanks, barkeep.
For Hatfield,
I'll drink to that.
Parnell entered the saloon, walking gingerly, sniffing disdainfully at the beery odor.
Hello again, Parnell. Open chair for you. You want a beer? I'm buying. Least I could do for making you pay for my pie.
Does this place serve wine?
Nope. Beer, whiskey, and soda pop.
Then no.
Outside in the bloody street, the barber and his helper were scurrying about, loading up the bodies. Business certainly had taken a nice turn for the better.
You seem pretty calm, considering. Not your first time to see men die violently, Parnell?
No, I've seen several shootings out here. All of them as unnecessary as the one I just witnessed.
Justice was served.
Innocent bystanders could have been killed by a stray bullet.
Well, that's true. I didn't say it was the best way to handle matters. Only that justice has been served.
And now you've taken a definite side.
If that's the way people wish to view it, yes.
I have a good notion to notify the army about this matter.
And you think they'd do what, Parnell? Send a company in to keep watch? Forget it. The army's strung out too thin as it is in the West, and they'll tell you that this is a civilian matter.
What you're saying is that this ugly boil on the face of civilization must erupt before it begins the healing process?
That's one way of putting it, yeah. Dooley Hanks has gone around the bend, Parnell. I suspect he's always been borderline nuts. The beating and rape of his daughter tipped him the rest of the way. He's insane, and he's making a mistake in trusting those gun slicks he's hired. That bunch can turn on a man faster than a lightning bolt.
And McCorkle?
Same with that bunch he's got. Only difference is, Cord knows it. He's tried to make peace with Hanks over the past few weeks. Hanks isn't having any of it. Cord had no choice but to hire more gunnies.
And now?
We wait.
You are aware, of course, about the rumor that it was really some of your people who beat and sexually assaulted Rita Hanks?
Some of that crap is being toted off the street now. When Silver Jim and Lujan hear of it, and I've not mentioned it to them, the rest of it will be planted 6 feet under. But I think that rumor got squashed a few minutes ago.
And if it didn't, there will be more violence. Why are we so different, cousin? What I'm asking is that we spring from the same bloodlines, yet we are as different as the sun and the moon.
Maybe, Parnell. It's because you're a dreamer. You think of the world as a place filled with good, decent, honorable men. I see the world as it really is. Maybe that's it.
Well, if that is the case, I would still rather have my dreams than live with blood on my hands.
And I'd rather have the blood on my hands than have it leaking out of me. Especially knowing that I could have possibly prevented it simply by standing my ground with a gun at the ready.
A point well put. I shall take my leave now, gentlemen. I must see to the closing of the school for the summer.
See you at the ranch, Parnell.
Both Smoke and Bob kept at their beers for a little while longer, but found they had lost the taste for it. Back out on the boardwalk, they saw that most of the gunnies had left, heading back to the DH spread. Lanny Ball stood on the boardwalk in front of the saloon, looking across the street at Smoke.
Lanny Ball, I'd say he's one of the best gun slicks to be found anywhere.
Better than you?
Just as good, I'd say. And so is Jason Bright.
Lanny turned his back to him and entered the saloon.
Another day, but it's coming.